But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
For me, the only way this turns into a game is if the Bills become uncharacteristically sloppy with the football. I went back and watched last year's Broncos game. And for anybody that's done that, it's pretty easy within the first 10 minutes of the condensed watch to realize that was a just completely different team that just didn't take care of the football.
That's our friend Matt Parrino.
Yes.
New York Upstate. Bringing the heat, talking about Bills and Broncos, and reminding me of a terrible football game last year. That was also Ken Dorsey's last game as the offensive coordinator for this team.
Yeah, good riddance.
Yes.
Have fun in Cleveland, baby.
He is also gone in Cleveland.
Yeah, that's right. Have fun wherever you're going.
I will say, I think that Dorsey has a place in the league as quarterback's coach, but it's very clear that he's showing that he doesn't have the OC chops. Anyway,
yeah.
Let's not get off on a tangent. Bills and Broncos coming up tomorrow afternoon. We're talking 25 hours away, baby.
Mm-hmm.
We are 25 hours away from kickoff.
Bills 8.5-point favorites, too.
8.5-point favorites against Denver. And what Matt Parrino said is absolutely the truth, because what was happening with Buffalo, why Dorsey got the gate, and why the Bills were 6-6 at one point last year? Turnovers.
Mm-hmm.
Allen was not protecting the football.
Right.
And there were spacing concepts and issues that caused some of those things. But yeah, no, it was a very gung-ho offense that was bad at protecting the ball.
Yeah. Joe Brady does simple better, simply put. Like, that's just how it is.
And he also has been using motion and precept notion that that Dorsey never did to help break down and try to recognize coverages pre-snap.
Yeah.
And also try to create plays.
You know how frustrating that is in Madden? Because it translated over to the game.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, you know, winding the clock down, and then you got to take a delay a game or call a timeout because it takes, you can't make them move quickly in motion. They just jog.
Yes.
But there's so much motion now.
Yes. But that's the thing, is that this team uses it and utilizes it and weaponizes it. And something that Mina Kimes said yesterday that I loved,
mm-hmm,
is the Broncos are one of the more susceptible defenses when it comes to passing yards given up to running backs.
Yep.
Expect a lot of that motion, a lot of Brady trying to create opportunities for James Cook, Ty Johnson, Ray Davis.
Mm-hmm. I think Ty Johnson is going to have a game. If I had to pick a running back, he's been a big receiving back for the Bills this season in a few games. Ty Johnson game, for sure.
Yeah, I think that Johnson's going to be useful here. But Parrino mentions, though, coming back here, the turnover battle. These are two of the cleanest teams when it comes to turnovers in the last half of the season. Buffalo doing it all year. Denver, in particular, the second half of the season, has been very clean when it comes to turning the ball over, or lack thereof,
yeah,
and not losing the turnover battle. These two teams know how to protect it. These two teams know how to take it away. These two teams have been winning the turnover battle more times than not throughout the entire season. This is going to be the game of who blinks first in that regard. Because the Bills defense lives and dies on the turnover. They are a team that will give up yards. They are a defensive unit that
lets explosive runs go.
Lets explosive runs go, but also has become more susceptible to the pass as of late. Through, yeah, the latter half of the year.
Especially secondary injuries.
Secondary injuries did not help.
Mm-hmm.
Not having the same safety tandem that you did through the first half of the year because of injuries did not help. With that said, the Rams had no problem feasting on a healthy Bills secondary, did they?
No.
No. So there is going to be a little bit of stress there. There's going to be a little bit of worry about the Bills' defense, how they perform, because Bo Nix and the Broncos' offense has been playing very well closing out the year.
They have. You know what? You know, Keon Coleman, if I had to name one person, I think he's going to have a game. Man coverage, well, Broncos' defense.
I was going to say, you also had Ty Johnson on your list there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, those two, but receiving-wise. Yes, Ty Johnson in the receiving game as a running back.
Mm-hmm.
That basketball blood in Keon Coleman, those contested catches, that's huge against this Broncos defense that runs a lot of man coverage, especially deep. You know, Keon Coleman will be able to do it. I think it's going to be an interesting matchup. I kind of, when you look at it, score-wise, possibilities, it's going to be the Bills get off to a quick start, put them out immediately, right? Like,
yeah,
maybe. Or it's going to be close, and then they'll finish it out. It's, like I said in the beginning of the show, it's very reminiscent of the Lions defense to me, like the way they play.
By the way, Bo Nix had a very strong season.
He did.
Statistically. And you want to know how statistically strong it was? He has more passing yards than Josh Allen does. Yes, Allen sat an entire game's worth after playing one snap.
Yeah, and many fourth quarters.
But when you look at the stats, though, this year, when you look at the numbers, Bo Nix has more passing yards than Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
Almost, he had 29 touchdowns. Allen had 28 passing touchdowns. The difference is Allen has protected the ball all year. Nix, in the beginning,
struggled.
The nickname was Bo Pix.
Yeah, and then he went up and grabbed his own touchdown pass from Cortland Sutton. Remember that?
Yep.
He made a contested catch in the end zone. Like, what? From that point forward, it's been a different Bo Nix.
Yes.
So,
and Bo Nix, again, he ended up with 12 picks on the season. He threw 4 in his first 2 games.
Yeah.
That's how it's going to happen.
Well, and any advantage, I'm sorry, looking at it, a rookie quarterback in a wild card appearance, first ever, is an advantage in itself, especially if your D-line puts pressure on it.
And welcome to the real conversation that you have to have. How nervous are you about this team? Because oftentimes when they have bowed out in the postseason, the defensive line has not been able to perform.
Yep.
This is going to be one of those moments because the Denver Broncos, again, one of the least sacked teams in the National Football League this year. Gave up 24 on the entire season.
Yeah.
One of. You want to know why they're only one of?
Because the Bills are the other.
Josh Allen was sacked only 14 times this year.
Yeah. And that's
a testament insane
to the O-line, but it's also
a testament to the player, too.
There have been quite a few. Remember, I forget what game exactly it was. It might have been Detroit. He's getting brought down, and he just rips it out of bounds like before his knee taps the ground. Like, that's Allen avoiding the sack. So as much as I want to give all the credit to the O-line, because I think they've had a phenomenal season, you got to give a lot of it to
Allen. Does also take some of that credit. Because, ready? Sacks are not entirely an offensive lineman stat either.
Nope.
They are also on a quarterback because there are sacks taken by quarterbacks who misread pre-snap fronts.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't recognize something, you don't slide a protection, that sack's on you, big dog.
Yeah.
That sack's not on the offensive lineman. They were doing what they were told. So you need someone to be running point on that, and that's what happens with quarterbacks is sometimes they will take a sack because of a pre-snap read or a misread. And that is what Sean McDermott and Bobby Babich in particular are going to have to do is try to disguise things.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Bills are a team that does not necessarily have the most statistics when it comes to sack totals.
No. They've started blitzing more frequently to bring more pressure to quarterbacks.
But that's where you could disguise that,
though. Yes.
That's where the fun begins.
And
Buffalo did finish with 39 sacks on the year, by the way.
Yeah.
So they do have some good numbers here, but they're not always the strongest.
Mm-hmm.
Or the most consistent, I should say. You do need production.
Your defensive line was asleep for a lot of the season. It wasn't until recently.
For a middle part of it.
Yeah. It wasn't until recently that Ed Oliver started really showing Ed Oliver again, right?
Yes.
Daquan Jones just isn't the same player post pectoral tear last season.
Yeah. That's a tough injury.
And he's just older too, right? Age-wise. Yeah. But your edge rushers, Von Miller, getting warmed back up following his suspension being served. Greg Russo's been there all year. He's been one of the more consistent contributors in the
sack column.
But a
timely blitz also will always matter.
Yeah.
Those are things that you can use to manipulate and disguise coverages to screw up a young quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key.
Pressure, baby.
Pressure from different areas, from different places, and being able to trip up a rookie quarterback. Even though Bo Nix is an experienced rookie, yeah, he ended up playing a lot longer of a college career than most rookie quarterbacks do. He played Joe Burrow in college. Burrow's in his 5th season in the NFL.
Yeah.
For context. So, there you go. But Nix is a guy that he's seen a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But now you also have to deal with a defense that can disguise these coverages. They can make things frustrating to you.
They're heavy in the sack column too, aren't they? The defense, they sack quite a bit. I'm trying to remember.
I've got the numbers here. Hang on. 63.
Yeah.
You're looking at one of the best defensive pressure teams this year.
Yep.
And a lot of it comes from their linebackers.
Yeah.
Nick Benito, Jonathan Cooper lead this team with double digits of sacks. Benito 13.5, Cooper 10.5. So they also like to blitz and bring pressure.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget, their secondary is pretty good too with Surtain back there as well.
It's a lot. There's going to be a lot pre-snap between these two teams. And this is the chess match that's always fun to watch.
Yeah.
Pre-snap, recognizing where pressure is coming from. Allen having an ability to shed tacklers in addition to escaping them. Nix is pretty mobile himself.
Yeah, he is. He's escaped pressure quite a bit this season. But they do kind of match
Nix up. Nix ended up with 430 yards rushing this year, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are games.
What Sean Payton saw in him was absolutely correct.
There are games where he has had to run the football and run a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There are also games where he's ended up having to be contained.
They kind of match up very well, though, don't they?
This is a fascinating matchup.
Yeah.
And it's a lot more exciting than the last time these two teams met, which was last year, a very bad game mm-hmm. between these two teams, each of them trying to hand the other the win.
Yep, and then Matt Smiley got Ken Dorsey fired with 12 men on the field.
Yes, that did happen.
Mr. Frowney, again, strikes.
Yes, that did happen.
That was one game I think I was off because I had to work early the next morning.
Yep.
I went to bed and they were ahead because I had to get up early. I woke up the next morning. I was like, what happened? It was like the Sabres, the 4-0 collapse against Colorado this year.
Yeah.
I went to bed and they were up 4-0. And then all of a sudden I woke up and I'm like, what happened? Like, it's just one of those games, you know?
Yeah, and for me it was they took that late pass interference call, flipped the field, and I'm like, all right, this game's over. I'm leaving. I get in my car, I turn on the radio, I hear that the kick was missed, and I start laughing.
Yeah.
Hysterically.
Yeah.
And then start laughing again in a different kind of hysteria.
That's like a Joker laugh right there.
Yeah.
Like, just start.
At first it was legitimate laughter, then it was Joker-fied all at once.
Yeah.
But yes, no, this is a game that is going to be not entirely, but this is one of those where you say the secondary marries the defensive line.
Oh, yeah.
You're hoping there's no divorce.
No.
Tomorrow. Because you need your defensive line on their P's and Q's mm-hmm. in order to help out with this attack, because getting pressure and disguising pressure on a rookie quarterback is going to be a big deal. It is an important aspect. It is an important issue, and it is something that we need to make sure that
you need to make him uncomfortable
throughout the game.
Yeah, make him uncomfortable and make him feel like he's playing a Super Bowl contender. That's what you need to do. Yeah, impress your will upon Bo Nix.
Yes.
That's
you have to disguise it. You have to cleverly utilize it, and you do have to get home.
Yeah.
You have to not just have win rate or pressures. You need to get home.
Make physical contact.
You got to cause some hits. You've got to cause there to be a little bit of uncomfortable setting, especially in Buffalo on the road. Crowd's going to be into it. Those kinds of plays get a crowd more engaged. They get them louder. They get them more excited.
And that's something I've seen brought up online as well through the metaverse that, oh, he's not ready for Bills Mafia at home. I'm like, he plays in Arrowhead 2 times a year. He's totally ready for that.
Once a year.
Yeah, they're in the same division. Oh, yeah, once a year.
Well,
but
the thing was the trip.
Exactly.
But the problem is the trip to Arrowhead, that was the one they lose on a blocked field goal.
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, he's used to loud environments.
Yeah,
like,
it's not something foreign
to him that it's going to be that much of a game changer for him here. I mean, it might be. Who knows? But it's not something that's foreign to him.
There's a difference between November 10th and the beginning of the playoffs.
Yeah. The pressure, too.
Not just the pressure, but the intensity.
Yeah.
There's a difference. There's a palpable difference within a crowd when it comes to Week 10, Week 11 versus
the playoffs,
the postseason.
Well, look at the perfect game. That crowd. Everyone's shirtless. Fitzmagic's up in the stands shirtless.
Oh,
it's just like there was a whole entire different energy to that game. That game was just a masterclass. I could watch that every day.
That I'm looking at here is the Bills also are the best team in the league this year at home.
8-0.
They finished unbeaten. And that is not something easily replicated. As a matter of fact, only one other team did it. Can you guess who it was?
Kansas City.
Yes.
Considering they only lost in Buffalo, yes.
And in Denver.
In Denver, yes. I forget. God, sorry,
so
what a
annoying
throwaway game at the end of the season.
They're so annoying.
You made the Bengals start a change.org petition to let them in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Thanks, Kansas City. Really appreciate that one, by the way.
Yeah. I if I knew anyone that signed that, I'm never speaking to them again.
Like no
that,
respect.
Even anyone from Cincinnati?
Zero respect.
None. Win against the Patriots at the beginning of the season. Then you could do something.
Start
like
your
that
season on time.
Yeah.
They
yes
started 0-3.
Yes.
You know how hard it is to make it in the playoffs if you're 0-3? And this is something that these were my first words ever spoken to me on this station. If you start 0-3, are you really a playoff team?
That
was said.
It's one of the truer things that could be said.
Yeah, I was producing with Howard and Jeremy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there you
I
go.
I had said something about, like, you know, because the Bills started, like, they had the chance of being 0-3, and I brought up the percentage of how many teams make it, and then Jeremy ended up replying with, if you are 0-3, are you really a playoff team? Which then...
It's a very fair point.
No, that yeah, no, I will never forget that, Dave, because that was unknowingly a nice little fun reminder of, hey, try to think differently.
Yeah, right.
You know, you're not just a kid anymore. Think differently.
Yeah.
Think better. That's still one of the most memorable days I've ever had working here. So, yeah, no, Cincinnati weren't a real playoff team because they never start their season on time.
Yeah. But that game at the end of the season... Do you think, I guess, if you were the Broncos, you shut them out. You're riding that high, right?
Do you think that comes in?
Do you think they are riding it that high? Like, I don't know. Like, where's your head at with how they're reacting to that win?
I think it was needed for your confidence because you had lost two in a row. You could have ended up skidding into the playoffs,
yeah,
potentially. Had Cincinnati lost the night prior, you would have been able to skid into the playoffs losing three in a row. So you did need to win this game. Winning at 38-0 is a different story.
Wouldn't Miami have snuck in then?
No, they lost.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, either
Cincinnati
way. Yeah,
would
right
have snuck in.
Sorry,
I was
thinking the original scenario.
If this
scenario
wasn't this.
Yeah.
But for me, the Broncos, you did need that. But I also do think that...
Not taking it too...
I would... If I'm one of them, I'm hoping that yeah the team isn't carrying
don't
that
don't
high.
Don't let the head inflate.
Yeah, yeah. That would be a big issue and a problem there. That said, Sean Payton is one of the most boisterous coach personalities out there.
Yeah, especially in the film he made with Kevin James playing him, the home team, based on his suspension for Bounty Gate.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, though.
Also, just words that are said. Like, I remember the exchange last year between him and the Jets about Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah.
And then he proceeds to lose to the Jets and Nathaniel Hackett.
Right, right, right. Back when, you know, that was the year before it was the Jets' year, remember?
Yeah. That was, oh boy.
No, Sean Payton, though, you have to respect the head coach on the other sideline. He's got
yes
experience, Super Bowl experience, playoff experience with a good New Orleans Saints team.
He's got a lot of experience. He's got a lot of a track record. I do think he gets too much run for that one Super Bowl.
Oh, 100%. It's like Tomlin's Super Bowl a little
because
bit.
It was 2009.
Mm-hmm. It's been a while.
It's been a minute.
That's like Steelers fans with Mike Tomlin saying, oh, Tomlin has a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
When, like, the comparison of the coaching styles between McDermott
right
and him. I'm like, yeah, that Super Bowl was, it feels like a millennium ago.
Yes.
Like, it's not the same. Ben Roethlisberger is not playing in the NFL anymore. Like, we cannot use that as a, that's like us saying, yeah, you know, for the current Bills or something like that. Yeah, four Super Bowls in a row.
Yeah, we've been to four Super Bowls in a row.
Yeah, no, this team has not. Like, let's stop with that. Please. Please.
Yeah.
Little PSA there, but...
I don't think anyone uses that as a bragging point, though.
No, but like the four straight
it's
AFC championships
shameful
and stuff like that. It's a little shameful, but no other team's done it.
It's a little dirty because like they lost all four of them.
Yeah.
Like
it's like you're playing cornhole and it's like the bag rolls onto the board. And some people count that as like a dirty bag.
It's like you scored a goal with your butt. Like, yeah, it happened, but you're not proud of it.
Yeah. Like the kick from the Sabres. The kick into the net.
Ugh. You're like, yeah, it happened, but like you're not really bragging about it.
That happened in the Bandits game last night. The final
Buckle?
Goal, Dane Smith, final goal of the game, empty net. It hit one of the Toronto players and just bounced in.
Yep, they don't ask how.
No.
They ask how many.
Just got chalked up.
So when it comes down to it, though, the coaching matchup's going to be fascinating. The Broncos have themselves a good staff.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also going to lead to my big question about Sean McDermott now. Yeah, here I am bringing in one of the burning questions on my mind an hour and a half into the show. Shame on me.
Well, there's an acronym we addressed.
Yeah, there was something that diverted my attention. Mm-hmm. And it's this. If there is an early playoff exit by the Bills again, and we have to have uncomfortable conversations, despite the fact that they won 13 games, would it change any opinions about the head coach?
Public opinion.
Public opinion, probably not, because that would mean, oh, he's a good regular season head coach. He always flounders in the playoffs. But would it be something where...
The front office
thinks... Is there uncomfortable conversations that have to be had because of it? Because it would be the same old failures.
Right.
And you're getting to a point where like it's peaking.
Yeah. And you have Josh Allen almost hitting 30.
Not peaking, but it's plateauing.
Yeah.
You're flatlining in like the divisional round again, for example, or even earlier if that were to happen.
If you go in reverse, if you go out in the wild card, and here's the thing. I truthfully look at this situation with the coach. Five straight division titles, 13 win seasons are a regular thing for this team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a couple years they haven't been, but whatever. You know how much money they make from primetime games at the stadium because the Bills win so much and play so well? Like,
yeah.
It's kind of like, yes, I think public opinion, the fans, the Heat would turn on. But in the front office, I don't know, man. I think you still have that belief.
You'd still be able to turn around and go, you got 13 wins out of a retooling year.
Yeah. What can he do if we...
Where we now have salary cap room again.
Yeah.
And we can make the moves and improvements that we want to.
Yeah. That's why I'm saying I think fan opinion would trump the...
Fan opinion would absolutely start burning.
Yes, but the front office opinion, I think he's on a throne of ice.
Even a pundit, you know, or even something like what we do.
Yeah, us. I wouldn't be out on McDermott if that happened.
Yeah, no, I'm not out on him, but like...
I think the switching up of, after those moments, right? The Rams game, the timeout. They happen.
If it's a moment issue,
yeah.
Then yes, there's probably
get
a little
bit more.
Get what
Notre Dame had and have the guy for the moments next to him feeding his ear on the sideline. Like, assist.
Or even so, if they lose a game, but it's just a tough game and it's a tough out, but there's no, like, moment that you can point to and go, the head coach had a gaffe.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would help in his favor. Of course. But if there is a gaffe that people will point to, or if there's a moment that people point to about McDermott and they lose a game ultimately from that, not from it, but like, you know, it's a contributing factor, that will make things a lot more difficult for a conversation.
Yes.
Because then there's this interesting one side of you got to fire him. Absolutely. Like the fan opinion like that, it would dig in harder.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the answer to the question does sound like it would be more so confirmation bias. Because this year, they win 13 games.
Mm-hmm.
McDermott is nowhere in the conversation for Coach of the Year, by the way.
No. He's one of the more winning head coaches in history, by the way.
Yes.
NFL history.
Really, the Head Coach of the Year award goes to, it should be changed to most surprising head coach record.
Yeah. Like, oh, you rebuilt the team. Like, that's essentially what it is.
Oh, you guys did a good job.
Yeah. Like,
Brian Dable, here's a Coach of the Year award.
Yeah. Harbaugh, I think, is in the
What'd
running.
You do 2 years later? 3-14? What the?
Yeah. He's still on staff, and so is that GM that let Saquon Barkley walk. So we're going to see what happens there.
Yeah.
That Hard Knocks episode was tough to watch.
I don't know, man. The Giants, the Giants problems start with Mara.
I think, yeah.
He is way too involved.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like another. It
sounds like another franchise I know.
Yeah.
In a different sport.
Passion Project.
So, my big deal, though, is this. McDermott, I do think, to curry a little bit more of that public opinion, they do need a deeper run.
If they hit the AFC Championship, they're fine.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I would say fine. Of course, it would sting.
It would sting, but it's not... The pitchforks aren't coming out.
Yes.
Like, that's essentially
because then you're looking at it like, okay, there was a better finish here in a retool year.
Yep.
Jinx, you owe me a Coke.
That's fine. I would say it. I don't drink pop, so...
Well, you owe me a drink now.
Yeah.
But again, if there's an early bow out, the confirmation bias when it comes to anything about him, mm-hmm. I think digs in deeper into trenches.
Yeah.
And that's something I would want for him to avoid.
Yeah. The only reason I bring up those moments, too, is because they happen far more infrequently than the big blowouts and big victories.
Yes.
And that's why they're so much more noticeable.
Because when they lose in a... like a heartbreaking way,
a 3-point deficit in like an absolute coaching blowout. Hell, you know what I'm saying?
Hell,
like
hell, the Bills and the Ravens this year was an uncommon loss.
Yes.
They don't get blown out very often.
No.
As a matter of fact, it's very, very rare.
Right. And that's why I think people are confident going into a Ravens game again. Like, because that just...
Oh, no. I think people here are the opposite.
Oh, I think the national opinion, just from what I've seen. Like, but
fans here, man, there's a... There's a whole lot of insecurity about Baltimore.
Yeah, it's just whatever.
803-0550 is the number to call. How are you feeling about Bills and Broncos as we are 24 and a half hours away from kickoff?
We've cut 30 minutes.
We've cut 30 minutes into it. What do you think about the matchup? How are you feeling? What do you need to feel better about this team? Is a Super Bowl the only thing that you will accept? Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly. Here with you on a Sports Talk Saturday, you're listening to WGR.
Get in there tight. I want to look you in the eye. Let's go. Everybody. Hey, man, these moments don't come back around all the time. They just don't. They're fleeting. They're here today and they're gone tomorrow. Take advantage of it. This game is going to be won in the deep water. What do I mean in the deep water? Everybody's comfortable in the shallow end with 2 feet on the ground. All right? We live in the deep water. Woo! We live in the deep water where it's uncomfortable, where it hurts a little bit. That's where we live. And I'm not talking about playing hard. Everybody talks about playing hard. I'm talking about draining your guts. I'm talking about from the bottom of your feet. I'm talking about seeing sparks in your eyes. And it hurts. I'm talking about straining for that logo on the side of your helmet and not the name on your back.
Yes, sir.
Because we know what it represents. It represents everybody here you see and everybody you can't that we've talked about. I'm here to strain with you, man. I swear to God I'm here to strain with you. Let's go. Everything you got, strain with everything you got.
Let's go.
Let's go. Bills on three. 1, 2, 3.
Legend of the game for tomorrow.
Hold that thought. I'm going to run through a Collins. Brick wall real quick after that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
We'll dismiss Joe to go do that. He can go get up and do that. Why? Because we've got a little mini roundtable going on here today for Sports Talk Saturday with Bills and Broncos tomorrow afternoon at 1 o'clock. Typically, we have this segment here as the Bandit season has begun here and they go off to a 4-0 start. We have Trevor Howard here. We are not going to do the regular scheduled programming today. Like I said, I kept one tradition, and that's what we had to do. Like, otherwise, we're a lawless civilization. That said, I'm not going to be able to hold up that end of the bargain with the Bandits here today because I think I'm just all too hopped up on playoffs start tomorrow for the Bills. Playoffs start today in about 4 hours.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. Some good games on the docket, as we've talked about.
We'll hit up the Bandits for a little quick blurb at 12:50.
Mm-hmm.
So we're abandoning and eschewing some traditions today. The booty cheek of the week had to stay because that's just a thing that we do.
Mm-hmm.
Busted. Busted.
Busted. Trevor was one of those with us, by the way, for that fun little story.
A rookie intern was CND player.
Yeah. Yes, you had the rookie experience, and then you had your boss making fun of you. So there you go.
It was complete. The night was complete.
That's full circle right there.
Love it. Bills. Circle of life. I heard you guys mentioning the Lion King.
Yeah, again.
So that's a circle of life moment.
Yes.
Bills, Broncos, Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Yes.
Shroot Farms.
I
play off football.
I'm excited because, again, this has been 2 months waiting for me of relative inaction where we knew where the Bills comfortably were for the better course of 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
We knew where they were going to be. There were slight little chatters about, hey, could they steal the one seed? And then the rest of the NFL did not cooperate.
One team in the NFL did not cooperate.
No, the rest of the league did. Not quite.
Oh, yeah, right, because they technically sold those. Because
you could have beat them.
Yeah.
Any one of those ding-dongs could have beat them.
Mm-hmm.
Including tomorrow's opponent, Denver Broncos.
Yep.
They lost on a blocked field goal to the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, any one of these goofballs could have beaten the Chiefs, and they didn't. The Bills did. But they were very comfortably a 2 seed for the longest time, so we had to end up engaging in toxic discussions about something. I will say this. I'm impressed with what the Denver Broncos have done this season based on how they've been doing it. They have built from the trenches out two of the better lines in the National Football League. When it comes to their defensive line and their defense as a whole, they have the most sacks in the league. Their offense only gave up 24 for the entire season. In the trenches, Buffalo does have a little bit of a counter. You're looking at the best team in the league at avoiding sacks and not surrendering them against a defense that did it the most this year. That is strength versus strength, and that is one of the more fascinating matchups that there's going to be. Is it because I'm 200 pounds that I'm fascinated about the offensive line? Maybe. Big boy watches big boys.
Those are big boys, though.
Those Mac are big trucks. Boys.
Like, that's like 300-400 pounds.
Those are big
people.
Boys.
Mac
yeah.
trucks.
No,
yes.
I was high school level big boy. I was not big boy. Yeah. In high school, I played on offensive and defensive line. Like, that was just what I did.
Mm-hmm. In the trenches.
I was big boy, but I wasn't big boy. That's why I'm here, not there, you know? That's one of the reasons. The other is
Are you saying you're not on the Denver Broncos?
I'm saying I have no athletic talent. But I'm fascinated with this matchup, though, because even some of the shakier plates with the offensive line from the course of the year, like Osiris Torrance looked like he had a little bit of a step back, but has steadied himself through the second half of the season. He's actually looked very good now. This offensive line had a big question mark entering the year. Mitch Morse left in the offseason, part of the bevy
Wednesday.
Of cuts,
yeah.
Where that was, again, them taking their medicine. It tastes awful, but you're going to be better in the end for it, I guess. Mitch Morse was the surprise, though. Mitch Morse was the one that everyone went, wait, hang on, that guy's still viable. Why him?
Mm-hmm.
But what happened instead? The Buffalo Bills just marched on swimmingly. Because Connor McGovern kicks from left guard to center.
Does a phenomenal job.
David Edwards plugs in at the left guard. And here we are. We are looking once again at an offensive line that seemed to have improved from where they were last year.
Yeah, it was like a plug-and-play scenario.
In pass protection. Run blocking, I think they suffered a little bit, but they do still have their moments where they are road graders and they will move people out of the way. For me, it's going to be the Bills' offensive line against the Broncos' defense. Strength versus strength. That's my favorite matchup in this game.
It's the gladiators going at it.
It's the strength versus strength.
It's the battle in the trenches.
It's the battle in the trenches. It's underappreciated, but it's also something that both of these teams are elite at. That's the other part. What is the biggest matchup that you're looking at? Could be individual. It could be team-centric. It could be some sort of compartmentalized matchup that you guys are looking at here. Joel, I'll start with you.
So I mentioned Ty Johnson, Keon Coleman. I'm really going to hammer home Keon Coleman because Amari Cooper is most likely going to be matched up with Surtain. Right?
Yes.
So what does that allow? Cornerback two on Keon Coleman. Contested catch rate against man coverage. It just seems like that's a match made in heaven at this point, especially his connection with Allen. You know, last week, it was Mitch Trubisky and Mike White playing quarterback. Say what you want. He should have had a couple more catches. You can digest any way you want to. But I think in the playoffs, the wild card, first wild card appearance for him, first playoff appearance for him, he's going to be a difference maker for that Bills offense. Really, really just being their primary deep target and going up and grabbing touchdowns. But I don't know. I really, Keon Coleman's my big man. But on defense, if I had to pick anybody, Terrell Bernard. I think, you know, the way they're going to send the pressure and things like that, he's going to be big in the flat there with the slot receptions, things like that, the running backs for Denver.
In the middle of the field, yep.
Yep, the middle of the field, especially, you don't, Milano still isn't Matt Milano. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he's going to start or not. But Dorian Williams is solid as well. But I think Terrell Bernard, as the captain of that defense, is going to really set them up for success. And yeah, the D-line's going to have to play, but give me Terrell Bernard busting up some pass plays and run plays. He's been very good with that all season when he's healthy, and he's fully back to healthy too, so that's good.
Honestly, to extend on that point though too, Denver does not really utilize players that aren't their wide receiver core.
Yeah.
So he's going to be trying to help out Taron Johnson mm-hmm. and the secondary a lot here with slot receivers, because that's what they typically go to here. Their leading tight end was Adam Trautman with 188 yards on the season.
Yeah.
That is...
The slot is their safe place, essentially. That's what they like to do.
Yeah, like, but they don't utilize their tight ends at all.
No.
Like, Dawson Knox had 311 this year.
Mm-hmm.
Dalton Kincaid, with a down season and missing a couple games with injury, had 448. So their best tight end had 188 yards. They don't use it. But they will use the middle of the field with slot receivers, so exactly. It's going to be... You're going to have to help out a little bit with the middle of the field.
And he's good in coverage, too.
Based on that.
Yeah. He's not just a tackling linebacker. He's up there picking off plays and everything.
Trev, I'll go to you. What's the matchup you're looking at?
I mean, I'm going to go basic on it. Why don't we just compare the two quarterbacks? Bo Nix is very naive to the playoffs. Doesn't really mm-hmm. know the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. He's played in Oregon, which, I mean, electric atmosphere. He's gone on some pretty deep runs with the Oregon Ducks, but he's never experienced the NFL playoffs. When you look on the other side, 17, Josh Allen has been in multiple playoff games. He's had the Bills Mafia rallying behind him in those home games. And in those games, Josh Allen, especially in the first round, has really been one of the most electrifying mm-hmm. players to ever see on the field. So when you're looking at the two quarterbacks, who's more experienced and who's not? I think that's, it might actually just come down to that. And I know you were mentioning, Joe, mm-hmm. Keon Coleman. If Pat Surtain is covering him, who's going to be covering Khalil Shakir?
Mm-hmm.
You got to have, you know, locked down defenders to keep those guys down, because
yeah.
when you got 17, and he could also run. Not all, I'm mentioning the, you know, quarterback play. No one's really ever talked, you know, I mean, a lot of people do, but as far as today, Josh Allen could also run. I know that Denver's got that defensive line that's very, very strong, and Derek yeah. was talking about that. You were talking about that earlier, but Josh Allen has that ability to run through that defensive line, make plays out of nothing. That could be the difference maker between Bo Nix and Josh Allen in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, and part of what I had mentioned with Allen, we talked about this earlier, Joe, was Allen does also do a good job of avoiding sacks on his own right,
yeah.
extending plays, making those opportunities come from nothing.
It's a good matchup.
And that helps a unit allow the least amount of sacks in the league because of that. You know, the offensive line has to do their job. Josh Allen does also make life a little bit harder on defenders when it comes to actually getting those sacks, because, A, he's larger than most quarterbacks are. He's more athletic than most quarterbacks are. And he is...
He's built like a linebacker.
He's,
like,
he's disruptive.
Yeah.
He will create something out of nothing, or he'll extend a play so long that, okay, at the end of it, sure, I have to bury it out of bounds maybe. But typically, he likes to try to find that player that is open, and more times than not, he's hitting them square on the numbers.
And I was going to say, I've been on record for saying Josh Allen is the most dangerous when you get him running towards the right sideline.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Rolling yes. out to the
it
right.
It is unbelievable yeah. what that guy can do when you get him just jogging to the right-hand sideline.
He'll take it
He'll
to
throw
the
it
one
all
inch.
All the way across his
yeah.
body.
Yeah. Which, that gave me a mini heart attack.
I mean, it's anxiety-inducing,
well,
but
yes.
like, it's also phenomenal to watch.
How do you think he's feeling running to the sideline?
Anxiety-inducing right. when I saw that play to Coleman against yeah. the Jets.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll forgive him.
You know what I want to throw one last thing in here. Another mm-hmm. player, Dawson Knox. Look at the past few wild card games.
Yep. He has been the guy to show up.
He catches the first touchdown in every single one of them.
He had a great
Not just
game.
The first Bills touchdown, the first touchdown.
Hmm. That's fascinating. Nice job.
He was great against the Steelers.
Hammer Dawson Knox.
Yeah.
first touchdown scorer for this matchup, I'm telling you. Isn't that crazy,
it's
though?
It's about utilization of tight ends, though.
I stumbled upon that yesterday.
That is
I was like,
crazy.
No way Dawson Knox is actually like the primary opening. And it's not just the Bills' first drive. It's the actual like first drive.
Like, it's like they
the
build
first
the first
the
touchdown
they
of the
build
game
the game plan around him.
Yeah.
And it works.
Well, both of the tight ends are yeah. very open to receive passes, too. They're both very good at it when asked to do it. So, especially Dawson Knox coming off that wrist injury last year, he's been better this season. So, Dawson Drops is no more.
Can
so
we look at maybe a check down to James Cook? Would that
and
be
that
in the
is
playbook,
the running backs? Yeah,
and that is
can
something...
we look at James Cook because that we are mentioning that defensive line with the Broncos.
Yeah, that's something actually. Mina Kimes pointed that out yesterday, and if someone knows ball, it's Mina. She points out that the Broncos are one of the more susceptible teams defensively to receiving yards by running backs.
Yes.
So I would imagine Joe Brady's going to have himself cooked up a nice bunch of pre-snap motions, a lot of those designed plays before the snap, trying to create opportunities for a player like a Cook, like Ty Johnson, like Ray Davis, or even Curtis Samuel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And
Curtis
Khalil
Samuel,
Shakir.
You can line him up as a receiver, too.
And you said, you know, if Surtain's on Coleman, what do we do?
Right.
Amari Cooper's still on this team, too.
Yes.
So that's huge.
Yes. There's going to be a lot of things here. But a nice little roundtable there, Trevor. Appreciate the chipping in here.
Yeah.
We'll get a little bit of Bandits blurb here for you coming up next. Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly, Trevor Hauer here for a brief moment on Sports Talk Saturday. You're listening to WGR. Welcome back. Wrapping up hour number two here of Sports Talk Saturday, Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly, joined for a brief little bit here by Trevor Hauer. Trevor joined us for a little roundtable thing because I didn't want to waste his time entirely here today because we want to do something every week talking about the Buffalo Bandits, but I felt like it's
playoff football. It's a different situation.
This is a set the tone show, and mm-hmm. we had to do so properly. Yeah. So we had Trev on for a little bit of a mini roundtable, so to say. Joe, you mentioned something earlier today about how the Bills have a tendency to give up explosive runs.
Yep.
When it comes to Broncos running backs in particular, the team as a whole, they have 10 plays of 20 or plus yards for a run play.
Mm-hmm.
Only four of them have been accomplished by a running back this year. Bo Nix has done it six times, but Javonte Williams, Jaleel McLaughlin, Audric Estime, and Tyler Batty, they are the ones. Each of them have done it once.
So yeah, not explosive runs, what you're saying is not something the opponents of Denver have to worry
about. It's not something that Denver running backs have a tendency to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's when pressure's breaking, when the line breaks down,
Bo
pressure's getting there, Bo Nix is going to be the one that will scoot.
Yeah. That just shows his talent and ability,
too. It is his escapability that... Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned that, too. He can scramble. He can run. And that just shows it right there.
There's your anecdotal evidence.
There we go.
For that sort of thing.
Indubitably.
Trevor, real quick, and Joe, the Bandits stay unbeaten, though.
They do.
Last night in a tough game.
Keep the Rock, Toronto Rock, defeated completely, 0-4. So it was a very impressive performance from the Bandits last night. It's... You know, one of many of this season already, just impressive games. It was a closer one.
It was one of those cliche trap games kind of deal.
The 0-4 team comes waltzing in. You think it's going to be an easy win.
You got the QEW rivalry between the Toronto Rock and the Buffalo Bandits. And for a lot of that game, it felt like just back and forth the whole way. Toronto was leading for most of this game. And every time the Bandits would come back and maybe take a 6-5 lead or maybe a 12-11 lead or whatever it was last night, Toronto would score right back. And it was something where the Bandits were probably thinking to themselves, how do we put these guys away?
Yeah, I was writing the game story. I'm like, yeah, the Bandits took the lead back, but it was short-lived. Toronto within a minute stormed back.
It totally was. I mean, and Toronto, you got to give them credit.
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with a ton of injuries. They knew they were 0-4 going into one of the loudest buildings that you could ever experience in indoor lacrosse.
And it was loud.
They really showed out. And we expected a very physical game between these two. They don't like each other.
Fights galore, pretty much.
Fights galore. And
yeah, we
are thinking of Zach Belter right now, who took a right hand and
got his bell rung quite badly.
Yeah, we're thinking of him. Hopefully he's in good spirits. But it was very, very physical. And Ian McKay.
Yeah.
Did anyone really have the transition, Ian McKay?
No,
leading
goals.
The team in goals. This is his second game this year where Ian McKay scored five times in a game. He did it in Ottawa and he did it in Buffalo
and
against
only
Toronto.
Two of them were on the power play, so they were mostly 5-on-5 goals.
And one of them, I believe, was a 5-minute power play that they were on.
Yeah,
the referees, yeah, they were definitely filling out that scorecard yesterday.
Yeah, they had to hit their quota.
Wow.
You know, on the reviews and everything like that. But
go ask John Gertler.
Yeah, it definitely elongated the game, but the ending result, Bandits win 15-13, take down the Rock, remain undefeated. Philadelphia comes to town next weekend, Saturday night, 7:30 face off.
Yeah, Joey California and I will be up in the press box for that one. That'll be a
Joey
fun
California.
One.
California.
I got to throw this little tidbit in too. Ian McKay, this was tweeted out by the Bandits on their official account. Ian McKay was playing for something more. After recently losing his stepdad to cancer this month, Ian set a new career high in points with 8 and tied a career high in goals in 5 in last night's win. He had the little sticker on the back of his helmet.
Yeah, that's even...
So he was playing for something way more there. Big shout out to a guy like Ian McKay. Great guy. And was definitely playing for a lot more that night. And I think to get the win against their arch rivals was the cherry on top of... a great night.
Yeah, right. And arch rivals they were, especially with that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Trevor,
that's phenomenal.
Thank you for making your time here today.
Thank you, Derek.
I appreciate that you
were willing
to adjust with us on the fly.
Of course.
By the way, I went into a deeper dig on that Bo Nix big play thing.
Mm-hmm.
Only one of them happened after October 17th. And that was against Kansas City.
So, okay.
In the last game of the year.
Yeah.
And
against the practice squad.
It was the lateral play that got ruled an illegal forward pass.
Mm.
He ran for 27. Laterals it. It was a lateral, but they called it an illegal forward pass.
If only that happened sometime in the Bills' history, right?
But the other six of the other five 20-plus runs,
yeah,
they all happened within week 7.
Oh, okay. So it's not a regular thing.
He's been less likely to flee the pocket.
Hmm.
That's what's going on.
Interesting.
So.
This might be something where
he's more dialed in, possibly.
Yeah, it's such an enigma. All Not right. Aaron Rodgers, but it's such an enigma.
All right, we're late to the break. We got to get hour number 3 going here. Coming up next, Derek Kramer, Joe Kelly. Thanks, Trevor Hauer, for jumping in. This is Sports Talk Saturday. We've got another hour, 24 hours away from Bills and Broncos right here on WGR.